You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. That's the song Knights of Sidonia in the background by the band Muse. It's one of many bands I've discovered years after they were cool, of course, when they came up on a streaming service. If you use music streaming platforms like Spotify or Pandora or YouTube, there's a good chance that the algorithm technology built into it has helped you find a new favorite artist or song. And while you can still browse a record shop and pick at random, there are cheaper, faster ways. The ways we search for and discover new music has changed quite a bit since the rise of the internet, not necessarily always for the better. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you discover new music to listen to? Do you use things like Spotify Weekly or YouTube recommendations? Do you get introduced to new artists or songs by friends or maybe on the radio? Or do you shop record stores for something cool and new? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeremy Morris is an associate professor in media and cultural studies at UW-Madison. Jeremy, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me again.
Can you talk, first of all, about how radically things have changed in the way people discover music these days?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I mean, you mentioned these services like Spotify and iTunes. I mean, the amount of music now that we have access to is great. But the worry, obviously, with having access to that much music is how do you find what you want to listen to or what you might like to listen to? So these services have gotten really good at trying to answer that question for you, and they've sort of positioned themselves as the ones who can uniquely solve that problem, right? We have all these recommendations for you thanks to all this great technology we're building that can get you to hear a whole bunch of music you never would have been exposed to otherwise.
You and some of your colleagues around the country recently wrote about this, and you did your best to lift up the hood, to look at the so-called artificial intelligence, and the algorithms that go into those recommendations that we might see on these services. How much do we know about how that works?
Well, yeah, it's really hard to get a full sense of it because a lot of this stuff is proprietary technology. But, you know, there are enough accounts of how these things get built, and there are journalists who are doing a lot of really good work in terms of unearthing how specific practices work. But yeah, you know, I mean, you're looking at a huge combination in sites like Spotify that involve, you know, lots of technology at work, but also lots of people making decisions about what music, you know, should be featured on certain pages, on certain playlists, and all these different features that the services offer. So, you know, there are certainly a lot of technologies at play, but I also like to remind people that there are also always still a lot of humans involved in this process. So part of that report that we talked about was, you know, reminding people that AI, artificial intelligence, or that algorithms are not just technical things, right? They're also highly cultural. They're designed by people. They're created with certain biases in mind about what music means and how music should be discovered. So always thinking about both the technical elements and the cultural elements of algorithms or AI or any technology is important.
That's a point I want to dig into more, because we hear this with the use of algorithms in so many spheres of our lives these days, not just music suggestions. And this idea that, well, it's scientific, it's an algorithm, it's objective and unbiased. Can you talk about the human element and how it can really be more biased in some ways?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's any number of ways that bias creeps into the process. I mean, you can think about, you know, first of all, the amount of tracks that something like Spotify has access to, right? It may be a huge amount, but there's lots of musics that maybe are not represented on Spotify in the first place. So the algorithms aren't going to capture any songs that aren't being licensed to Spotify or that aren't represented by Spotify. But then also, you know, the people who design these algorithms, design these discovery features are designing them with a particular idea of what it means to listen to music in mind and what music is and what popular music is, right? So a lot of times that may not represent the wide variety of musical cultures that are around the world. So always kind of keeping that in mind when we think about how these algorithms work is pretty important.
Talking to Jeremy Morris from UW-Madison, associate professor in media and cultural studies, looking at how we discover new music. It's changed a lot with the rise of various streaming services, all trying to help us find new music that fits into our already existing preferences and parameters. Love to hear your own examples. 800-642-1234 of how you have discovered music, past or present. maybe going back to the old days. What's your memory of discovering a band that you came to love in a record store, on the radio, from a friend, in a movie soundtrack? Or how did you discover a song or an artist yesterday online? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeremy, I know another point of concern, and again, that you and your colleagues wrote about, is this idea that, okay, when I use these services, and I do, a picture is being painted of me, and it can allow people to sell things to me, for example. What kind of things do we know about what they know about me when I'm listening to their music?
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, that's a really interesting element of it, right? Like digitization of music, or the turning of music into these kind of streaming services, has really blown music up into millions of data points, right? So every time we, you know, press play, every time we press skip, every time we skip a track, you know, or we dislike a track or like a track, all those things are signals that get fed back into, you know, their profile of us. And, you know, sometimes that profile works out, but other times that profile can get kind of messed up, right? Sometimes you're listening to Spotify with friends and you may be listening to songs that, you know, aren't your favorite. Sometimes your kids are listening, and that can throw off the algorithms as well, right? So there's all these ways, but, you know, again, Spotify's reacting to this, and not just Spotify, but these music services in general, are trying to like find that balance between, you know, what are honest and true signals that we are giving the system versus versus which ones might be noise. But, you know, that gets really tricky for a system like Spotify to parse. So anytime we're thinking about what shows up on our playlists or what's being recommended to us, right, we always sort of have that question, okay, why? Why is that being featured to me? Why is it telling me that I should be listening to that song or that band now?
Is this necessarily any better or worse, Jeremy, than, you know, well, once upon a time, this record executive determined what got recorded and produced and marketed in my area, or a radio station executive or a radio station computer in Cincinnati, or whatever the case. Is this different, better, worse? I don't know.
Right. I'm glad you pointed that, because there is certainly a long history of how music has been curated for us. Whether you talk about radio DJs, whether you talk about music producers or A&R reps, right? There are all these technologies and roles in which music gets kind of filtered before it comes to us. So in that sense, yeah, no, Spotify's algorithms are not necessarily different. What they do is they add kind of a new element to that, an element which I'd argue, you know, relies heavily, like you were saying, on personal data, on the giving up of kind of intensely personal details about our own kind of habits with listening to music. And so Spotify is really trying to kind of play on that element of it. Now, whether or not you find that invasive or extremely useful is going to depend on the kind of music consumer you are and your relationship with music in that way, right? So I wouldn't necessarily say it's any better. I'd say music has always come to us as a result of decisions that were partly made by people, but also, you know, decisions or factors that are filtered through the technology that music comes to us through, whether that's the CD, the cassette tape, the radio, right? Any of those things all have their own kind of mechanisms, again, for shaping how we understand music.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Cato. Jeremy, hi.
Hey, how you doing? So my comments are, you know, I definitely use the streaming services, but they seem to only, you know, suggest music that's at a, you know, a higher production value. And what I really miss is, you know, back when I was younger, going to check out live shows at places like Concert Cafe in Green Bay, where you'd maybe know one person playing or one band playing, and there'd be like three other bands, you know, and you'd leave with a new DVD or a new CD or a vinyl and, you know, some new music. It's really hard to try and find something new now if you're just using the, you know, Pandoras and things like that.
Jeremy, that's an interesting point. And guest Jeremy Morris, is there a threshold, you know, we're not going to discover that completely unheard of band in our streaming service?
I guess it depends. You know, it really, there's definitely, I'll definitely agree here that one of the things that is problematic about algorithmic recommendation is that you can fall into this loop of like, if I keep listening to the things that sound similar to what I like, then I'm going to keep hearing the same things recommended back to me, right? So we may, you know, our kind of recommendations may be kind of closed in terms of how they come to us, right? I do think, you know, these services do offer a huge amount of music. So, you know, with a bit of poking around and trying to listen to different things, you can start to hear those different recommendations come to you. And yeah, things like Spotify's Discover Weekly playlist start to do that. But yeah, do you miss the ability to find these, you know, this kind of smaller or lesser known artists, right, that don't necessarily have the resources, don't necessarily get as many plays as some of the other bands, right? So I think there's still very much a question about like how Spotify as a global service provider interacts with like local music cultures and what you'd hear, like what Jeremy's describing about, you know, the local bands that may not necessarily be on Spotify or may not be, you know, huge and making a lot of noise on that. Enough noise to get recommended onto playlists.
We're picking up our conversation now with Jeremy Morris, associate professor in media and cultural studies at UW-Madison. We're talking about streaming technology and how it's changed the way that we discover music. And we want to hear how you discover music at 800-642-1234. Do you remember the first time you heard a band that you love? Was it live at a show? Was it on the radio? Did a friend play it for you on an album or cassette tape or 8-track or CD, or was it streaming? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Ethan is with us in Avon. Ethan, hi.
Hey, how's it going? Just wanted to say that I think Spotify is pretty great. It is limited in certain aspects. I think your previous caller mentioned you get kind of pigeonholed into a really similar artists. For example, I listen to a lot of obscure types of music, progressive and technical math rock kind of music, and I listen to the more heavy side of things. My girlfriend likes the same bands, and she listens to a little bit of the lighter side, so between the both of us, we get recommended a really broad spectrum, but we both find things that each other would like that we might not have otherwise, you know, found. And also, we find a lot of bands that you just would never have heard about. You know, they have like 100 monthly listeners or something like that. And then that can, you can take that away and go follow them on their own pages and purchase their music from them directly. I think that's a great way to kind of bridge the gap between old industry and the new form of listening to music.
Ethan, thanks a lot for sharing that story. I appreciate it. Jeremy, but what do you think about Ethan's strategy?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I love that point at the end too of, you know, taking it beyond just, oh, I heard this band on Spotify and I like that song, and then, you know, forgetting about it, you know, the next week when we get a new list of recommendations, but, you know, following up, listening, you know, on their other kind of outlets they're participating in, going to the concert, right? Because that's when you also get that other kind of exposure of like, oh, I see you know, the opening bands that opened for them, right? And I wouldn't be exposed to them either, right? So I think that's one of the great benefits and promises, certainly, of a service like Spotify is that they do have such a wide catalog that you would be recommended songs that you wouldn't necessarily run into every day, right? Whether or not that promise is always true for all listeners is a different question, but certainly, yeah, like the ability to do that and to find those gems that way can be very exciting.
Ethan, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. You can share your musical discovery voyages with us at 800-642-1234. Do you stream? How do you stream? How do you find new stuff? Or do you like other ways of discovering new music? You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Torsten is with us in Chippewa Falls. Torsten, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. It's all nice to discover all this new music through those streaming services, but it only will be able to hear those musicians if they can make money, and most streaming services pay almost nothing to those musicians. I mean, the worst ones would be Pandora and YouTube, then maybe Spotify in the middle of the road, and two services is pay a bit better, it would be Tidal or and Napster. And the best thing is to buy still CDs from the musicians, because if we want to listen to good music, we have to make sure that musicians can make a living.
Torsten, thanks a lot for bringing that up, Jeremy. Torsten brings up an important point that you and I have talked about in past conversations. What does this all mean for the musicians, especially for the non-huge names, as Torsten was saying, who are hoping to make enough money to keep playing music?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you reminded me that we did talk, because I was like, I think we talked about this in an episode before. But yeah, you know, certainly the royalty structure for streaming services is extremely complicated. You know, artists get paid a percentage of the total streams, you know, so the actual amount that ends up going to an artist given, you know, in a given month or something like that can be quite minimal. I will also say that, you know, even though the CD might be a little bit more in terms of that, the royalty structure there, depending on the record contract, is still quite out of whack. So, you know, it depends on the artist in terms of what the best way to support them is. You see, luckily now, a lot of new platforms that are trying to make the connection between your donation or your play or your money and the artist receiving that a little bit closer, right? So whether that's tip jars, whether that's straight up donations through some of the channels that they're now able to participate on social media are great ways. Live concerts are another good ways in most cases to support artists. So yeah, I completely agree with everything that's being said there, that's a highly problematic part of the streaming music economy. But again, you know, balancing that with the exposure that these services might offer to artists is something that I know at least some independent musicians find quite helpful.
Thanks for that call, Torsten. Also on the economic side of things, Jeremy, I always wonder, am I hearing this band because somebody paid for me to hear this band, whether a record label or the artists themselves? If a radio station did that, they used to call that payola, and people could go to jail for that. Is that something that's happening behind the scenes for streaming?
Right. And that's really hard to tell a lot of those things. Spotify used to run a feature called Spotlight, and it was a kind of promotion type deal with independent artists. I'm not sure if they're running it still or if they've rebranded it. In fact, I think they did, because a few weeks ago I saw something in the news on it. But, you know, it was this service where, like, if you were seen to be an up and coming artist on Spotify, they would get in touch with you, and they, you know, through some kind of deal, they'd put you in a special part of their website and feature your songs and some playlists. But again, you know, a lot of that stuff that goes on in terms of how and who gets placed on what playlists is not totally transparent to us. So as a listener, definitely asking that question of, like, how did that music get there? And is it just there because it sounds like other things that I listen to? Or is it there because, you know, somebody had a vested interest in making it get there? You also have, like you have with Google, you know, search engine optimization, you have companies and artists who get really good at trying to, you know, like, play with the metadata of their songs, mess with the keywords in their song titles so that their songs show up in your searches in Spotify before other ones. So that's not necessarily like the person paid to be there, but they are trying to kind of game the system in a particular way.
Time for one more caller. Linda is with us in Rhinelander. Linda, hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm coming to you with a little bit of a different angle, I think, here, and possibly a different generation with a lot less technology in my life. But I religiously listen to CBS Sunday Morning, and they feature a new artist, a new group, or not necessarily new, but new to me. And they give that artist enough time that you can really find out if you like them or not. They interview them and they give them three or four songs to do in a segment. And if I like them, I go, wow, I'd like to listen to that. I put them in Pandora and then I follow along with them on that. I really love it.
Linda, thanks a lot for that call. Jeremy, still people reaching out to different media to get their first taste of some artists.
Yeah, no, and I think that's fantastic. And I love, you know, the way Linda was talking about context there, right? Like being able to get a bit of the context around the band for some listeners is really important to be like, do I want to invest in this band? Do I want to listen to them more? It's not just, did I like the music? It's like, you know, can I get a sense of the story behind the band as well? But yeah, you know, I think as sort of a closing thought on that, right? Like, if I want to use a bit of the language of algorithms and AI, right? Diversifying the inputs in terms of like how you get new music is always a useful procedure, I think, right? So don't just rely on one particular way of getting it, right? Don't just rely on Spotify's recommendations, right? Talk to your friends about music, you know, go into a record store every once in a while, right? There's all these different means through which, you know, turn on the radio, right? There's all these different means through which we can have songs kind of introduced to us. And I think kind of spreading that out as much as possible will kind of hopefully, you know, give you a bit of a wider exposure there.
Thanks for the call, Linda. It's just our last 30 seconds or so, Jeremy. Would you like to see more transparency for how these algorithms work so we know why we're getting what we're getting?
Yeah, I think more transparency, both in terms of how the algorithms work, but also in terms of, you know, like who's behind the algorithms, right? What are the ideas they have about music and about why they're building the things they're building, right? A lot of that stuff is very opaque to customers, very difficult to see. And so therefore, when we see that music, we're not entirely sure, you know, how it got there and why.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.
Jeremy Morris is an associate professor in media and cultural studies at UW-Madison. We talked to him today about how technology has changed the way we discover music. You could find a link to some research he's done at WPR.org/Central Time. And you could share your stories of how you discover music over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.